Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. So how did Zeta Talk begin? It began in an online chat group devoted to exploring contact with extraterrestrials. Michael Lindemann of the 2020 group started ISCNI, the Institute for the Study of Contact with Non-Human Intelligence, in late 1994. I, Nancy, had recently become aware of my role as a contactee, having been a sleeper all my life in this regard, unaware on the conscious level of my contactee status. But in late 1994, December or thereabouts, there was a UFO expo in San Francisco, where I lived at the time, and I went, very eager to meet other contactees. I signed up for one of Michael Lindemann's lectures, and he was handing out literature promoting his new AOL chat group, ISCNI. I joined AOL and promptly joined the ISCNI chat group in early January 1995. By January 19, 1995, Zeta Talk was born. Here's what happened. And I'm quoting here from the ISCNI chat logs covering this period. On January 15th, one of the moderators of the ISCNI board made a proposition, and I quote, "The abductions area inside ISCNI has been rich in messages from abductees who have remarkable recall of their experiences. In some cases, these abductees seem to be almost consciously aware of their experiences, both during and after. This degree of conscious awareness and even conscious participation in the events that surround each abduction, and the degree to which communication has been ongoing with the abductors, is, to the best of my knowledge, very unusual in the abduction field. Do some unique opportunities present themselves to us in this discussion area because of the unusually lucid, conscious nature of abductees' experiences? For instance, would it be possible for abductees in this board to communicate purposefully to the aliens during future abduction experiences, presenting questions formulated in advance with particular goals in mind? If abductees in this area feel this is possible, I propose that just such an attempt be made. I propose what will be called Project Contact, an attempt to communicate limited, carefully formulated questions to the abductors, where those questions have been decided through online discussion. If you could ask the aliens one question, what would it be and why? Let us carefully formulate within this board specific questions which participating abductees might attempt to discuss with their abductors during future abduction experiences. I propose that any posters with questions post them here. It will be important not only to clearly state the question, but to give the reasons why your question is important, i.e., what will be learned by gaining an answer to your question. If only one question can be asked and answered, why would your question be more urgent than other possible questions? After a number of such questions have been considered, the most urgent questions formulated in this online discussion will hopefully be obvious to participating abductees. We invite any abductee to learn the best questions, to communicate one or more of them to abductors during future abduction experiences, and to share with us any answers you may receive. Let's start first by formulating the questions we would like to have answered. What would your question be?" End of the quote. Well, I jumped right in, embracing this idea, and I quote from the log again, my response. "Project Contact sounds like a great idea. I myself, as an abductee, have requested and gotten answers to my questions just this past year. In most cases, the answers come telepathically, but sometimes I'm granted conferences with the Zetas. I suspect, given the ramp-up that is going on, that my experience is not unusual. Increasingly, I'm aware that I've been contacted right after it happens. The slightest meditative state puts me in touch with the occurrence. Less and less am I required to go into full hypnotic state of full relaxation and countdown, etc. I find I can unfold the memory of what just happened as though replaying a memory of past experiences. In these episodes, I sometimes learn things I could not possibly have known and rush to the library to get correlation. I'd be willing to participate. Since I'm already getting my questions answered, what do you want to know? End of my quote. The first question was posed, and I quote, "Fair enough, Nancy. Let's see. What would be my single question to ask of alien abductors? Okay, how about this one? There appears to have been a rapid ramping up to abduction reports in the past couple of years. Many people have the feeling that this is leading towards some dramatic event where you aliens will make yourself and your purposes evident to a large number of people. My question is this so? And if yes, what's the timetable and nature of this event? And how might we best prepare ourselves and others for it? Hope the aliens don't mind my combining several questions in one here." End of the quote. Well, Zeta Talk today is written more like a dissertation, several paragraphs on a single subject. But in the early days, I was still stumbling, finding my stride. For one thing, initially, I interrupted the Zetas all the time, to the point where they got annoyed with me eventually. And I quote from my response on January 17th. I asked the Zetas if they were game for this. Answer, yes. Question, are you leading up to making yourselves and your purpose evident? Answer, yes, definitely. Question, what is the timetable? Answer, well, that depends. Question, on what? Answer, on people and how they react, their awareness and acceptance. Question, define awareness. Answer, being aware that there are other intelligent beings in the universe besides themselves. Question, and acceptance? Answer, welcoming this rather than being frightened of this. They should be more curious and welcoming than frightened, quantitatively. Question, how will this occur? How will you make yourself known? Answer, this is already happening in some places. Question, as in Mexico, the CE5 event I recently read on Stephen Greer, etc.? Answer, that's a fair example, yes. Question, well, there you didn't let them take photographs, but you let them consciously experience it. Answer, there will be some places where this will become commonplace, and other places where the alien presence is not even known. The awakening will proceed at a different pace for different peoples and groups. End of the quote. Sure doesn't sound like the Zeta Talk delivery of today. From the start, the questions posed to the Zetas were broad, covering a range of subjects. And I quote from the log again, January 19th. If it were possible to ask additional questions of our visiting aliens, these are some questions I would dearly love to receive answers to. Is faster-than-light travel instantaneous, or does it, too, occur at a measurable speed? If the latter, what is the ultimate speed they're capable of traveling, faster than light? Does their unwillingness to provide more info on the physics of faster-than-light travel derive from their adherence to the Prime Directive, i.e. a code of conduct between stellar civilizations, according to which no interference in other civilizations is to occur? Does a Prime Directive exist across star-traveling civilization implicitly or explicitly? Can they do something which will make the validity of this course irrefutable, which will confirm that these answers are indeed coming from extraterrestrials? For instance, Could they predict a specific event in Earth's very near future which can be confirmed? Or have a UFO appear close up or far away in a specific place at a specific time whose presence participants can confirm? Are crop circles their work? Is the only purpose of crop circles to bring humanity closer to the awakening, or do they have other purposes? In other words, communications between different alien groups. Is there meaning in the symbols, or are they purely aesthetic, forms of art, or abstractions? Have human military forces aggressively obtained, i.e. shot down, some of their craft, as rumor has it? How do they react to these acts of aggression, which one hopes are accidental results of human-human military antagonism, not intentional attempts to shoot down craft recognized to be non-human? Is the awakening always traumatic, or is humanity's difficulty in accepting these new truths more an exception rather than the rule across different stellar civilizations? How long ago did the awakening occur in their civilization? Was the awakening traumatic for them? Are there artifacts of ancient civilizations on our moon, Mars, or other planets in this solar system? If so, do they know their origin? Where is 90% of the universe's matter which Earth scientists have not been able to locate, but which is theoretically believed to exist in addition to visible suns and planets? Will the universe expand forever or eventually collapse back upon itself? What is the farthest they have ventured from their home planet in terms of light years or in terms of the distance from Earth to our sun, etc.? Have they been to or had contact with life forms from other galaxies? Have any fundamental differences in life forms, rules of physics, etc., in those different galaxies been discovered? How long have they been coming to Earth? Have they assembled zoos of terrestrial animals and plants, etc., on their own or other worlds? And what do they want to know from us as a people? End of the quote. Well, so much for posing one single question and debating whether it's the right question to be asked. We're into asking all manner of questions. I, Nancy, was the only contactee responding and did so at length. Soon, Zeta Talk dominated the ISC and I chat boards, which is to this day typical of any boards where dialogue with the Zetas takes place with any intensity. From the start, Zeta Talk gripped people who sensed the validity of the response. People either loved or hated Zeta Talk, embraced it as a source of truth, or feared it from the start. And this response remains to the present day. Soon, within days, the hostile questions started. And I quote again from the chat logs, January 21st. My question. Any human who did what the Zetas did to other humans would be imprisoned. Would you ask your friends if it is acceptable in their culture for them to impose themselves on a Zeta the way you have imposed themselves on humans? And what is the end that justifies these means? End of the quote. The Zetas, from the start, showed an ability to debate with the gloves off. Very effective, very logical, and in my opinion, always winning the debate. And I quote from my response, dated the same day, January 21st. I've posed this question to the Zetas. Is this a question you wish to address? Answer, we will not answer the question as stated. Question, what's wrong with the question as stated? Answer, it asks us when we stopped beating our wife, for one thing, and it assumes a misjudgment of human society. Question. In other words, as the question states, impose themselves, is that what you mean by stop beating your wife? Answer. Exactly. Question. Let me take the liberty of restating the question. Many abductees feel their permission has not been granted and equate abductions to kidnapping or abuse and assault. Would you respond to these civil rights complaints? And would you explain how the Zeta culture may, if at all, influence your determinations in this? Answer. That's much better, and we will respond. We've been granted the right to proceed from the Council of Worlds. Some call this the Association of Worlds. The name is not important, as all members understand intuitively what it is of we speak. Seeding Planets, a genetic evolution whereby the genetic fiber of the intelligent species on a planet keeps pace with its spiritual development or spiritual level, is governed by the Council. Homo sapiens is to leap, albeit over generations, to a higher level of intelligence and telepathic ability. Accordingly, we have been given a charter to proceed, albeit humanely, in this work. Our time frame is clear to us. This work is not, as you say, a snap. It's stretching our abilities, which are considerably higher than yours at the current time. The checking and testing we do is most necessary. Since you would not be capable of understanding, we won't explain the details. Suffice it to be stated that our work is not, as one said, a ninth grade science project on Zeta Reticuli. We don't eat meat for compassionate reasons. You do. The comparisons between this important work and experiments humans do on animals or other humans cannot be made. Would you compare the hunting of a wolf pack to the dedication of a research team intent on finding the cure to a disease? Both are a pack or team. Both are dedicated. Both teams feel their work is of vital importance to them. However, their missions cannot be compared. Question. You also stated that the original question had a misjudgment of human society. Would you explain that statement? Answer. What we do to abductees is done on a daily basis by doctors, dentists, parents, teachers, policemen, custodians, and husbands to their wives. Humans most definitely do not apply the same rules of behavior to aliens that they do to themselves. Spouse abuse is rampant, but husbands are scarcely ever imprisoned. And the new awareness of spouse abuse will not change these practices. Parents are frequently cruel to their children, mostly out of ignorance, but sometimes deliberately as they know they can get away with the deed. Some racial groups die at the hands of society's protectors, the police, and this is called an understandable incident. They were trying to escape or attacked. For the few times police brutality is called for what it is, there are 1,000 times this proceeds as business as usual. What kind of ignorant statement is that, that humans would be imprisoned for what we do to abductees? Even parents full of love and concern for their children sometimes cause them pain or confusion, but do so for the better good of the child. Are these parents to be imprisoned? We think not. End of the quote. But as is typical today, those who fear the visitors fear their advanced technology and wish for the existing status quo to continue. White males rule over males of other races. Men rule over women. Adults rule over children. Employers rule over their employees. That comfortable and known relationship, especially in the eyes of a white male. Zeta baiting continued, and I quote from the log, January 22nd, I'm sure you understand that I must speak from my perspective, which I think represents that of many others, by the way. You obviously feel what you do is ethical, because those whom you hold in authority have authorized your actions. It seems to me this is similar to the Nuremberg defense. In that instance, a group of Nazis argued that their actions were justified, because people in authority told them to proceed. The court, however, disagreed, stating that a governing body authorizes your actions, makes them ethical in the sense that they adhere to rules and standards. This does not necessarily mean they are moral, however. End of the quote. This debate went on endlessly, with a hostile human not budging. This is the case today, where those who are fearful, and in particular resentful of the alien presence, refusing to budge. This is an emotional issue, not intellectual. Thus, discussion does not change the matter. Ridicule, as well as hostility, also showed its ugly face early. But there were also the thank you notes. And I quote, March 18th, I would just like to say now, thank you for posting this information. It talks to me, and I am grateful to all those responsible for bringing it here. I would have said so earlier, but my head had to stop spinning from all of this growing I have done in the last week or so. That of which you and these posts are largely responsible. Thank you, thank you, thank you. End of the quote. soon found I had to divide the Zeta responses into categories because the stream of consciousness approach to answers made it impossible to locate a subject. The 14 categories present today was born. Awakening, covering sightings in books and movies about aliens. Being human, covering comments by the Zetas about the human condition. The Call, covering how humans initiate contact with aliens and what to expect. Density, dealing with dimension shifting and the birth and reincarnation of souls. Government, covering MJ-12, the secret government, and the cover-up over the alien presence. Hybrids, covering the Zeta-human hybrid race being developed. Myths, covering religion as well as other myths. Orientation, covering the spiritual focus of those in the service to self versus the service to other. The pole shift, covering the earth changes preceding the pole shift and the shift itself. Rules, covering the rules aliens visiting Earth are under and engagement between alien groups. Science, covering technical answers about subatomic particles, astrophysics, and the sciences. Transformation, covering the change of the Earth to becoming a home for those in the service to others. Visitations, covering what contactees experience and how to recall the visits. Worlds, covering life on other planets. People reported they signed on to AOL first thing in the morning to check for new Zeta Talk with their first cup of coffee. It soon became apparent that Zeta Talk was taking over the forum. If not new Zeta Talk, then discussions on whether to love it or hate it. A hot button was the discussion on the coming pole shift. The Zetas were, as usual, blunt from the start. And I quote from the log again, March 20th. The poles shift, the winds shift, volcanic eruptions continue from activated volcanoes that take some time to settle down. The rains seem continuous, but plant life does not mind this as much as the mammals trying to get dry. Diet is not as varied as before as far as staples go, but in some regards are more varied. Those who survive learn to eat anything, including bugs. Bugs are numerous, growing in great numbers in the humidity and living off the tissue from the dead, which seems to be everywhere. You must expect the habitability to be equivalent to your preparation. Where your government does not inform you of what is coming, and where the establishment fears panic and disruption more than it fears the consequences of not informing you, your preparation will suffer. However, in truth, it will be difficult to prepare. So much will change, and the change is not under human control. End of the quote. Soon, the Zetas were challenged to prove themselves. This is an issue that continues today, the challenge for proof. Prove to me you're real, and then I'll take the message seriously. This challenge comes when the reader starts to take the message seriously, as it has the ring of truth, and they get scared. They want to prepare for the coming changes, or discount the message, and don't want to do their homework, looking at the earth changes and Zeta Talk accuracy, and sorting it all out for themselves. They want an easy answer. Proof. I've been asked to have Zeta ships in the sky spell out the word Planet X, for instance. Something simple like that. And I quote from the logs again, this time from January 30th. I issue my challenge to the Zetas, if you're indeed participating in this dialogue, and if the communication of your ideas to the human community is as important to you as you have stated and shown, go the final mile and prove the reality of your existence. Accept my request for hard evidence of your reality. Display one of your ships publicly in a time and place communicated to this board through your intermediary, Nancy. End of the quote. The Zetas explained their element of doubt requirements. However, this type of demand that the Zetas prove that they are real is made regularly up to the present date. I point to the element of doubt explanation as a quick response to these challenges. And I quote again from the logs the next day, February 1st. Proof stands before the world today. Crop circles and their residual impact on soil and vegetation, mass sightings, disappearing pregnancies. When one gets into the game of proof, one is speaking to the wrong people. Do you have any doubts about the extent that people in denial will go to? Speak to people accused of horrific crimes against their loved ones. It didn't happen. It almost certainly wasn't them. Homo sapiens, as with most intelligent species, has a capacity to argue against unpleasant facts. As the unpleasant nature of these facts increases, so do the arguments. Be advised that the rules in place guiding our contact do not allow us to dance in the skies at your command. They do not allow us to manipulate your reality so that you can claim confirmation of our existence. You need not look far for proof of our statements. It's common knowledge that photos and videos that would be too staunch in their veracity simply do not develop. Likewise, the only physical evidence of alien biological existence or technology is in the hands of your government and other governments in alliance with your government on the alien issue. If this seems to you to be a double standard, it is. End of the quote. In the discussion on whether or not the Zetas are real or a figment of Nancy's imagination, other theories invariably come up. This was true from the start of Zeta Talk. Nancy is a team of government agents with access to scientists in various academic areas. Nancy's a member of the Illuminati. Nancy works for the CIA. Nancy's a brilliant con artist in it for the money. And, of course, Nancy is insane and listening to voices in her head. And I quote again from the log, March 20th. For the record, let me, Nancy, state once again that I am not a committee, nor do I work for or with any group of people. I am a contactee with over 4 decades of experience with the service to other Zetas, whom I have a close personal relationship with and know like I know my own family. The Zetas have stated that they are a committee of Zetas, and I quote, you are correct that you are not speaking to all the Zetas in any conversation, and that the mix of Zetas involved alters from one conversation to another. You are also correct that the tone of the conversation changes because of this. The Zetas involved in these conversations are not the same Zetas who have known Nancy since birth, though they can access information from these Zetas anytime they wish. The Zetas chosen to respond are chosen based on their familiarity with the individual questioners, or familiarity with the intended audience, or familiarity with any hidden agendas inherent in the question. This too affects the tone of the response. End of the quote from the Zetas. Michael Lindemann compiled 6 theories on the source of Zeta Talk, and I quote his statements. My own comments in class were intended to provoke consideration of various competing theories of what may be going on in Project Contact, some of which question Nancy's role. Again, from an outsider viewpoint, there are a number of such theories that have been broached by various ISCNI members over the past several weeks, such as A, Nancy is a brilliant writer of fiction. B, Nancy is a multiple personality talking amongst herself. C, Nancy works for some government agency. Maybe Nancy is really a committee or represents a committee, which could account for the astonishing volume of words produced. D. Nancy's really in touch with a paranormal source that represents itself as Zetas, but maybe something else. Nancy is sincerely convinced the Zeta identity is real. And E. Nancy's really in touch with the Zetas, and everything is precisely as she and the source says it is. End of the quotes. Within 6 months of its start, Zeta Talk moved to the web. ISCNI itself was planning a website, and in June of 1995 invited major contributors in the forum a spot. I grappled with hypertext and graphics programs, all this being new to me, and was ready before everyone else. With the help of a friend, impatient, I went on the web myself by June 24th. I'm often asked to tell my story. How did Nancy get to be the emissary of the Zetas? Within the body of Zeta Talk, there are excerpts from my story, but this is not obvious within the body of Zeta Talk, which is immense. To start, I'm a contactee and have been all my life. In fact, was in prior lifetimes. My recall of my first meeting with the Zetas was as a small child, perhaps 7 or 8 years old, playing in the woods down beyond the pond on my grandparents' farm. And I quote from First Meetings. This is in the visitation section of Zeta Talk. I was a little girl. I had coveralls, blue coveralls, and maybe a red t-shirt underneath. I'd go down in those woods there and be very observant. I would expect to find almost anything. I was very curious about animals, and I would be very quiet and watch for them. This time, I think I'm standing still. But it's actually somebody watching for me down in those woods. I'm standing still and have that feeling going up my spine that you do when you know somebody's around, but you don't know where they are or who they are. So I have that feeling up my spine. I'm by a fallen tree. I can't see what it is that I feel nervous about, but out of the corner of my eye, I see a movement from the left, coming out from behind a tree. I think there's something to the right, too, but I'm not sure. Somebody just steps out from behind a tree. It's one of those skinny guys, very gray, light gray, actually. They almost look smaller than me. I don't know what to make of it. Nothing said, and I'm just staring. Then I feel like there's more guys to the right and to the left. I guess I'm not alarmed by this because I'm so used to wild creatures, like the rabbits that we had for pets. So many wild creatures are very quiet, like deer. They only show themselves when they feel safe. So I'm not alarmed by this. I think a couple of them come up from the right and the left of me, from behind, and take my elbows. I'm still not alarmed because I'm just not getting any vibes from them that are hostile. I think we move backwards rather than forwards and away from that fallen tree. I'm seeing some sort of disc shape, small. There's really only 3 or 4 of these guys. It's a small disc shape, maybe 12 foot across, not that large. I'm pretty curious. I guess my initial reaction was curiosity more than fear. I'm trying to figure out what this is. I don't feel anything hostile. It seems like we just walk toward that ship, and there's a ramp that's let down from it. I feel a little nervous at this point when we're going up into the ship and I'm thinking it's a tight, enclosed space, and I don't know why we're doing this. The trees are dark, just very dense woods, and the weeds along the river made it very enclosed. I don't think I'm doing any resisting. They seem to be interested in my head and my hands and my wrists. They seem to be examining my hands and my wrists, the way my wrists bend. They seem to be putting their hands on either side of my head, almost like they're sizing it, looking at the very top of my head for some reason. Curious little creatures. Very gray, light gray, even slightly smaller than I am, although I couldn't have been more than 8 years old or so. One of them looks at me, puts his face close to mine, eye contact, I guess, and seems to be trying to communicate something. Maybe he's saying, "Do you know why we're here? Do you know what we want?" Then I think I just go and walk along the railroad tracks like I set out to do that morning. And then I just put it to the back of my mind, what just happened. That little guy coming out from behind the trees, like in the comics where somebody would pop out from behind a tree, just lean out. And the other two coming up behind me. End of the quote from First Meetings. The fact that the Zetas were asking me repeatedly if I knew why they're here was due to my pre-birth agreement for my current role. They were asking me to get in contact with my soul, to get an update, to get with the program. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Pre-Birth Agreement, written November 1998. Pre-birth agreements are relatively rare, as this represents an interference with the normal progression of spiritual development. The priority on Earth is for the young souls to have every opportunity for their lessons. Lessons are chosen carefully and are based on the young soul's needs. The fact of the transformation is considered the concern of adults outside of the schoolroom at present. Thus, pre-birth agreements have only been allowed to intrude as we approach the transformation, within the last century. But as the transformation progresses, they will become increasingly common. Our hybrid program, for instance, has been granted permission to institute more pre-birth agreements than in previous centuries, where it was close to nil, because we need to ensure cooperation with those who hold genetic parentage. Without a pre-birth agreement, it's a toss of the dice on what might incarnate into a piece of genetic material, the babe, and that babe choosing not to cooperate with our hybrid program. So we have certain key DNA parcels, the babes, incarnated with pre-birth agreements without too much hassle. Those who have a pre-birth agreement become aware of it at a fairly young age. They sense something different and become fully aware of it when the time is right. Nonetheless, they cooperate with this pre-birth agreement remarkably well. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Part of the program I had agreed to participate in was the hybrid program. I gave my ova repeatedly during my teens. And I quote from Pregnancies. This is in the hybrid section. I thought that he had come through the window, but I don't think he actually did. I think he just appeared in the bedroom, and I assumed he came through the window. It was mildly uncomfortable, but other than being a little anxious, I don't think I was concerned. The bedclothes were pulled back and he was checking out my tummy. It's like poking, like they do to check to see if your appendix is sore, poking around, but it doesn't seem to be a big deal. He'd come to check on something, I think. It was a status check. I get up and follow him out the house. I get up in my little nightgown, follow him out the door and slip down the street because the swamp was right across the street. We didn't go toward the barn, we went down where the trees are very dense, and there was a drop-off. I was just following him in my little nightgown. I remember one time when I went outside, and I explained it to myself that I just went out to check the night air or something like that. Well, maybe we went behind the chicken coop. There was sort of an open area there, right behind the trees. He came to check on something. There's a reason he was checking on something. I'm very aware of my pelvic area, the heaviness that you feel when you're going to have a period, where there's congested blood and the body is holding more water, and the organs there are feeling a little sexier just because of the fact that they're engorged. I have to get onto something. I'm thinking of the term bidet, where you straddle it from a standing position. You're not laying down or prone at all. There's all this heaviness in my pelvic area. I have a little cramping now in my stomach, the same sort of sensation when you have a menstrual cramp, when you're first starting your period and it's first breaking through so the flow can start. Cramping a little bit and feeling a release of pressure. In other words, the pelvic inflammation or engorgement is lessened, and at the same time, the cramping stopped. I don't think too much about that. Somehow, it doesn't seem to be a big deal. Certainly not as bad as throwing up because you're sick to your stomach. It's not anything even in that ballpark. It just seems to be a very small thing. I don't think about it. I walk back. This time I come out the gate of the chicken coop and come back in the same back door, like I'm worried about getting yelled at, having been out for a walk. I'm not supposed to do that. It's all very dark. Everybody's asleep. I just go back to bed. End of the quote from Pregnancies. When about 19 years of age, I was introduced to one of the babies, a hybrid baby, then about 3 to 4 years old. And I quote from Introductions, also in the hybrid section. This one's not one of those 12-footer jobs. This one's 100 feet, much bigger. It still has that basic saucer shape in its dark gray. I'm following a little bit behind him because I don't know which side. He goes along the bushes where we're between the garage and the ship. We go underneath the ship. It's not on the ground exactly, although I did hear a crunch sound. There's a little stair thing. 3 or 4 steps have dropped down 10 or 15 feet off the center. I'm glancing up there and it's all dark, but he wants me to go first. When I get up there, I see the lights are on the inside. It's a room, a center room, 30 feet across, but not the full size of the ship. There's half a dozen Zetas in there. It's not formal. They're just milling around. I'm very curious. There doesn't seem to be any kind of an agenda. I get the feeling that the door and the little stair have pulled up behind us. I have no idea if we're in motion or not, if we've lifted. I have the notion that we have, but it's a very gentle liftoff, just a slow rise straight up. I got my hands in my pockets and I'm looking around. Nobody seems to be paying any attention to me. There's an archway at the side, to my right, and a couple more of them come in. Seems to be a cluster, and I see a little one among them. His head is just above their knees. I can't actually see him because he stays right in the middle of that cluster. He doesn't hang back, and he doesn't lead out in front. He's always right in the middle. I just notice that some of those little legs are smaller than the others, and he's got little pants on. With the Zetas, they're just skin and bones, and that's it. You don't know if it's their skin or their outfits. But he's got little light-colored pants on, slightly baggy, and a little shirt, slightly baggy, a little dark-colored belt, almost black, thin, maybe an inch wide. His head is very white, and he doesn't have the gray colors that theirs do. Looks more round rather than the way theirs look, the teardrop shape. His is more round all over. They come out into the room, and he stays right in the middle of them for safety. I'm very curious about this. Then they stand still, and I step sideways to my left a step or two and put my hands to my knees, bending over a bit to get a better look, because he won't come out. He averts his gaze. He just keeps staring at the middle of my shins or at my knees. He won't look up. He's just tiny. His head would come just above my knees. He doesn't look like a little child with a big belly. He's almost as skinny as they are. He's got his little hands in front of him. I sit down on the floor and I don't look directly at him. I look off to the right and he's looking off to the left. I sit down on the floor and I unbutton my coat. I sit cross-legged. I'm talking the whole time about clothes, about how I have pants on too. And then he comes up a little closer. He's at my left shoulder, about 8 inches away, looking at me. As long as I'm not looking at him and I'm looking off to the right and talking, he lets himself come up. He's checking out my clothes. I think that's what he's doing, checking out my pants. I'm saying that I wear pants. I take off a shoe and show him my foot, that I have toes. I show my hand, that I have fingers. I pull my pants leg up to show him that I have a knee and a leg. I'm just nattering on. He kind of walks down toward my leg, staring at my calf and checking it out. I figured he's curious. I shuck off my coat to show him I have elbows. He's practically on top of me now. I'm going up into the hair of my head, and I lean my head forward to show him what hair is. I pull him to show that you can pull it, and it doesn't hurt. Then it's attached, and what it looks like on the scalp where all those little things spring forth. Then I think I show him my ear, and I close my eyes and I open my mouth. I've got my eyes closed because I figure that opening my mouth might frighten him. I put my own fingers in my mouth and touch my teeth so he can see I'm not about to bite him. And I feel this little finger, a little touch, like he wants to touch something too. I've got my eyes closed so he won't be shy. Then I hear one of them say, "This is your son." So then I open my eyes and I look up. I'm asking how old he is. It seems like 3.5 years. He doesn't have any hair. His head looks like it's all round and white. It doesn't look real hard. It's got dimples here and there. Our skulls are smooth, so I wonder if there's bone under there. Maybe there's just brain. He has tiny little ears. They're very small. His eyes are hazel-colored, and they don't have any whites. His eyeballs are bigger than ours. I ask where he lives, and they say, "With us." They say, "He's turned out well, and he was very curious about you." I ask, "Will I see him again?" They say, "Perhaps, if you both want to, we can arrange it." I get the feeling that it's time for me to go. I tell him he's very sweet, just a little doll, and so curious. I tell him I thought he turned out well, too. And I guess I'm a little teary.
Still am.
End of the quote. Contactees often run in families, most often due to the agreement to participate in the hybrid program prior to the incarnation. The reason for this is because DNA strands often need to be woven through repeated generations to ensure desired traits are captured. Following generations ensures this. As a contactee, I was known to MJ-12, which apparently kept track of which contactees were taken off Earth during visitations. I and my children were, at one point, taken off Earth. My first exposure to the U.S. military in association with spaceships. And I quote from the government section of Zeta Talk, Customs, written September 1995. I kept wanting to say that people in uniforms come out, but that doesn't make sense because these guys don't wear uniforms. I mean, they look like they have these little gray bodies, unless they're suits, but you can't tell. It almost seems like a tan or moving toward light brownish kind of uniform. Half a dozen people, they come out, sort of two abreast, but not in a formal kind of structure. A little informal. They move around like they're talking to each other. They don't seem to have any kind of gold braid or anything like that, but maybe some kind of an insignia to bespeak officialdom. I want to say that these are people, that there are some people here, Homo sapiens, three or four of them in these uniforms. This is a twist. They're talking to each other and they seem to have flashlights in their hands, like they're walking over toward us, talking to each other. Not arguing exactly, but talking, maybe more in a heated manner. They're not passive blobs, discussing something, possibly arguing. It's hard to tell. One of them says, "Oh, here they are." And the other one says, "So what do we say to them?" The first one says, "Just follow instructions." One of them says to me, "This is Lieutenant, oh, I don't catch the name," introducing the person next to him. "We're from MJ-12. Later, we get dropped right off in front of our tent. More or less. It's the dead of night. We go back to the tent and crawl in our sleeping bags and settle down. But I do remember that there was one time we went camping, and when people asked me what we did, I was hard-pressed to describe what we did over the weekend." End of the quote from Customs. Then in my late 20s, another significant episode occurred as I was preparing for my current role as a communicator, relaying Zeta concepts to others. This involved having a bit of their DNA infused into my brain in the area of the human brain involved in telepathic thought, transmission, and reception. Where this didn't hurt all that much, it was traumatic. And I quote from the transformation section, Communications. "I can feel the pain. I can feel the pain right here, a feeling of pressure on either side. Pressure. Let me think now. I'm taking my breath in short breaths, like... like that, like your chest is tight. A very bright room, sitting in something more like a reclining lounge chair, maybe like the dentist's chair, that type of thing. I think that my head was in a brace around the chin and my arms were down, sort of in my lap, almost in some kind of a armrest. I think they've got little snap things. They don't completely close like handcuffs, but they just partly close. They're around the bone structure enough that you couldn't pull your arm away. One here by the elbow and one down by the wrist. Maybe there's another more on the thick of it up above the elbow, but definitely the two below. I don't think my feet are restrained at all, but my knees are slightly bent. There wouldn't be much I could do with them anyway in that position." Then someone's saying, "Don't think about it." They're saying, "You won't remember this. You're not supposed to. This is for your own good, so we can talk to you." I think I'm sort of trembling all over, just because it was a very nerve-wracking experience. This is not like a spasm trembling, it's just that I'm trembling all over. I feel pale and very shaky. Someone pats me on the hand, something like that. One of them bends down and is looking at me, eyeball to eyeball, the eye contact thing. It's like he's checking out my reactions, my facial reactions, because they're looking at my eyes. But he seems satisfied at what he sees. I think one of them says I should move my arms and legs around and see if I can do it okay. I do kind of wiggle things. They ask me if I feel like going to the bathroom or anything like that, and I say no. I know what that means, something neurological. Feel sick to my stomach? No. Hurt anywhere? No. End of the quote from Communications. In preparation for my role as communicator, I was also given a number of life form orientations where I'd be introduced to various life forms from hominoids to the utterly weird. My only encounter with Beanbag Man made me faint for the first and only time in my life. And I quote from the World section, variety of life forms. Introduction to this intelligent alien caused me to faint for the first time in my life. The Zetas dragged me to my feet, and this introduction proceeded. Beanbag Man has two eyes and a broad, round head and a slight mouth. Asked what his home planet was, I received a telepathic explanation of a green hothouse kind of place. Beanbag Man looked like a round green blob with no bones. When I asked what he ate, I got a telepathic view of a bug like a beetle being crushed. I gave Beanbag Man a telepathic view and explanation of our custom of shaking hands, and he extended one of about 50 little claws that fringed around his waist. After a moment's hesitation, I took and shook one of the claws. End of the quote from Variety of Life Forms. I'm often asked why I, Nancy, got to be a communicator. Why not some famous scientist? Why not some well-known politician? I mean, why Nancy? Apparently, the big factor was my penchant for not giving in to intimidation, for recognizing service-to-self agendas for what they are, and refusing to cooperate with them. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Why Nancy, written July 1997. Nancy is unique as to her telepathic communications, though many others, seeing the success of Zeta Talk, have asked for this. It's not so much her body or her IQ or her age or location that determined our decision to accept Nancy's offer. She has other qualities, missing in others and in abundance in Nancy. Courage, the ability to stand up to service to self methods, absolutely, and a track record in this regard that allowed us to trust her with this mission. She has more than satisfied our expectations. Nancy is also unique because she has placed herself at great risk. Nancy entered into an unlimited engagement with MJ-12 in order to further certain goals. These are suicide missions, and Nancy understood the risk she was under when she engaged MJ-12. Several other humans had done so, and only one besides Nancy lives today. The others died at the hands of what was then the predominant CIA influence over MJ-12, brutally. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. My unlimited engagement with MJ-12 ended when MJ-12 disbanded prior to Bush and Cheney taking office, when it was obvious they had subverted the will of the people, and the MJ-12 governing board saw worse coming in the future. Zeta Talk continues to this day, but the original reaction to it in the ISC and I chat group are mirrored today in those who discover the Zeta Talk website. What has changed over the years since it started in 1995 is a collection of Zeta Talk accuracy examples, which continues to grow.
Hello, I'm Roger, President of Troubled Times Incorporated. We're a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping mankind survive during troubled times when self-sufficiency may be the only answer. Our organization offers a twin set CD of survival information at cost to the public. The CDs are in hypertext and PDF format, two popular browser formats, and contain all the information collected by the massive Troubled Times website. The CDs allow you to browse this information offline at your leisure. The cost of the twinned pair is $4.10, and this includes postage. You can also get the survival booklet, a hip-sized booklet of the gist of the Troubled Times advice, for just $5, including postage. We offer a popular combo package for $7.50 that includes both the CDs and the booklet with the lower postage expense reflected in that price. Send for your copies today to start making practical plans for your and your family's survival. Just click on the $4.10 CD link at www.zetatalk.com and your copy will be on its way.
That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought. those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.